98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Sold. Get the price for your home at 72sold.com.
This is how this works. Maloney looks through all the stories she finds interesting over the last 24 hours, and mainly a local focus, decides what she thinks you are going to be needing to know when you get to work or when you're talking sports with your buddies, and then she presents them to Wolf and me for your Rush Hour Reboot.
So when the Cardinals take the field on Sunday against the Lions, they will hear real in-person cheers for the first time all season. The Cardinals will be allowing family members and close friends of the team to attend Sunday's game at State Farm Stadium. The amount of people permitted to attend will be limited to no more than 750 people for what is being called a test of the Cardinals' health and safety protocols. Here's head coach Cliff Kingsbury from this morning.
I think overall, for our fans, I mean our family and friends, it's going to be a great experience. I know our players were thrilled to hear that Michael's doing that. We're excited to test those protocols, and Michael could have easily, just passed those tickets along to other people, but decided to give it to us. And so our players are fired up. They're going to be excited to play in front of that kind of intimate setting with their family and friends, and I think it's just an awesome deal.
Do you think this is the next step for the Cardinals to have fans attend games this season?
Yes, there's no doubt about it, Mel. I think this is a precursor to that possibility, right? A test run, if you will, as to some of the stadium protocols. And it's very encouraging to me because it's not just happening here. It's happening in a lot of different places across the country.
I love this, but I do wonder, are there any family rivalries that are involved? Like in high school, I played a position in front of the goalie at soccer that doesn't exist anymore, and the goalie's parents hated me, just hated me. So they were yelling about me the whole game. Are there any family members that's going to be yelling about a different player on their own team and have any strife created?
Well, that's a great point, Doug Leese, because honestly, Bernie Kosar, of course, and Vinny Testaverde's wife, they didn't get along. Next.
Kyler Murray continues to get attention from national media.
I've seen this one other time, I think, when thinking about all these players. I think it's Michael Vick, but he throws the ball better. And so to me, that was it. The way Vick burst on the scene, that's the way this kid is.
I'll tell you who Kyler Murray is. Kyler Murray, people are going to compare him to Michael Vick. He doesn't look anything like Michael Vick to me. Okay. You know who he looks like? If Barry Sanders was a quarterback, he'd have been Kyler Murray.
Michael Vick or Barry Sanders?
Ludicrous.
I know you want to go off, Wolf.
No, that's ludicrous right there. It really is. Just ridiculous, my friends, honestly. First of all, I don't like the comparison at all to Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders never threw a pass, ladies and gentlemen. Stop it. He's Barry Sanders. I don't like that from Greeny. And I don't like the comparison to Michael Vick because Michael Vick, although he could run the ball and ran it well and was a good quarterback, honestly, a good quarterback, Michael Vick never threw the ball like Kyler Murray. And when you think of the number one attribute for a quarterback in the National Football League, what do you think of? Throwing the football for a quarterback. It's what they are. It's what they do. So to compare him to Michael Vick, to compare Kyler Murray to Michael Vick is ridiculous. Because Kyler's a much better passer, and I think that matters.
Just so you know, for you, Wolf, and only you, okay, let me get this right here.
Recantation.
Barry Sanders went 1-for-4 in his NFL career as a passer.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
He threw one 11-yard pass, and he also had one interception. So he threw one pass to his team and one pass to the other team.
By the way, the jump cut of Barry Sanders looks not. You watch Barry Sanders run. He runs so differently than Kyler Murray. Why in the world he'd say Barry Sanders is beyond me.
It is. Their running styles are not remotely close. The quick little hip shift is what Kyler has. That it doesn't seem like he slows down at all when making a cut, but but he will slow down on a dime. He's got better brakes than almost anybody I've ever seen that stop him from moving quickly, and you keep moving because you don't have those brakes. Now, Barry Sanders had great brakes as well, but remember his brakes where he would just drop anchor.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
All of a sudden his butt would drop below his knees and
save
then be able to make a move.
Some for next segment, guys. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver gave his best guess on when the league will begin next season.
My best guess is that even though, as you said, it'll be the 2021 season, that season won't start until 21. we said a week ago or so that the earliest we would start is Christmas of this year.
Your thoughts on that?
So the 2021 season is not going to start until 2021.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I have to tell you right now.
Do you understand what he's saying?
Yes.
That he means 2020, 2021.
Yes, exactly. Okay. But it's not going to start until 2021.
Yeah, there is no 2020 portion of 2020, 2021.
Okay, there it is right there.
It's a lot just, of 2020, 2020.
It's just, it's just a weird thing, is it not? These strange times that we live in. And I was hoping for a Christmas Day tip-off, so to speak.
A Christmas Day present, the NBA.
I actually think that's the way it's going to go. Once the pandemic ends, I think Christmas Day will be the new NBA opening day from now on. They plan on playing an 82-game season. And if that's the case and you're not starting until about mid-January or so, you're now going to stretch this bad boy into easily like the 4th of July to end the regular season, I would assume. And then you're going into the postseason in August, hoping to have it ramped up before college football and Labor Day. And then all you have to do is restart the next season a couple weeks early, and you're back on a regular clock as far as the body is concerned with rest before playing another season. Yet you're never really competing with football. It would work. And they can always blame coronavirus and not say they did it for ticket sales.
I don't like it. It's just insanity.
We got time for one more, Maloney.
So the NBA playoffs continued last night. Jamal Murray took over late to seal the Nuggets' 114-106 win over the Lakers in Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. Will the Lakers lose another game this series?
Ooh.
Wow, that is a good one
great
right there.
Question.
You know what? Honestly, I don't think so. I was shocked, basically, on what I saw. The fact that the Lakers didn't come out in that first half and shut it down. I didn't think they came out with a lot of intensity. It was shocking to me to see that, especially as well as they can play defensively. The fact that they had Denver on the ropes, up against the ropes, 2-0 series lead. The fact they didn't come out and play with great intensity in that first half, that was shocking to me.
Maloney, I swear I was listening, but did you say this series or this season?
I said series.
Okay, then I'm going to say no, they won't. I love how tough the Miami Heat are. I think the Lakers are so much better than the Miami Heat, but there's no way I'm picking anybody to sweep the Heat. They just fight too hard. So I say Lakers win the Nuggets series 4-1, and I say they win the series against the Heat 4-1. There you go. So I do think they lose another game this season, not this series. Coming up next, who has been the biggest critic of Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury? You'll never guess how 13 months have totally changed his tune. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Doug and Wolf here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. In this beautiful part of, in this hour, give us about 30 minutes, Mike Hazen will make his final appearance as the guest of our Diamondbacks front office focus for the year, and excited to talk to Mike about what changes he plans on making in 2021. How do we make sure 2020 doesn't happen again? And what are the positives of 2020, even though when you look at the record, it doesn't feel like there are any. So that's coming up at 8:45 as the Diamondbacks come off a win over Texas last night. It's only a two-game series. They take on the Rangers today. That first pitch is at 3:10, and that'll be on ESPN 6:20 a.m. We wanted to take a beautiful part of the program right now and have a little fun. As it was August 16th, LaMarcus Joyner of the Raiders in the last season of the Oakland Raiders has just come to Arizona. and they give a beatdown in a preseason game to Arizona and calls it pretty boy football. And we're not going to let that pretty boy football take the physicality away from the game. And Rex Ryan on Get Up on ESPN was asked the next morning, what does he think will other defenses try to do what Joyner said they did of beating up that offense?
Absolutely. They're going to be like, look, who cares about this offense? There's a reason there's not, you know, all this type of offenses in the league. Why? Because I don't think it's going to work in this NFL. But, you know, the great
thing is, what part of it doesn't work? What specifically can't you do that you think?
You've got to be able to protect your quarterback. And I think that's the big thing. The other thing is, if you're going to go in there and say, hey, we're going to get 90 plays on offense, great. How many is that other team going to get your defense? And that's all fine and dandy until you start going three and out, getting sacked, and all that other kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, you're putting your defense out there for forever.
That's 13 months ago.
Yeah.
So that's what Rex Ryan is thinking when he watches this offense.
By the way, Douglas, did you notice how agitated Greeny was? He was annoyed. He was like, tell us why. Why is it not going to, right? What were they talking about, man? That, to me, it's, I love that. He was just, that's enough out of you, Rex. Shut it or tell us what it is.
Well, Rex now is looking at why this offense is so good.
Protects himself. I've never seen a guy take less hits. As soon as he scrambles, don't worry about it, Cardinal fans. He's not going to get hurt. He does not get touched. And so when you look at him, he either slides on the ground as a great baseball player, he gets out of bounds, or he sticks it in the end zone. Mm-hmm. You're not touching him. Dan, you and I talked about it. Remember in college, we're like, this kid never gets tackled.
Never, yeah.
And now he's not even getting touched. So to me, I've seen this one other time, I think, when thinking about all these players.
Uh-huh.
I think it's Michael Vick, but he throws the ball better. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that was it. The way Vick burst on the scene, that's the way this kid is right now.
Now, at least, and I don't ever want to be in a position to defend Rex Ryan.
Yes, defend him.
I don't think Rex Ryan, in that specific comment, and maybe he does it in others, is comparing as quarterbacks or comparing as if he's a scout, Michael Vick to Kyler Murray. Because what he specifically said was, I haven't seen a quarterback who's this explosive running and avoids taking hits to this extreme since Michael Vick. And I can buy that argument. I don't buy an argument where you compare the two as quarterbacks, but I buy that argument that he's saying.
Yeah,
if you
no,
get that specific in my office.
No, absolutely right there, Douglas. And I'm glad to actually see to hear that played in its totality, because now all of a sudden it does – it's not nearly as offensive to me. It does clean it up a little bit. I mean, if you want to say that you haven't seen a running quarterback, I should say, as talented as Michael Vick until Kyler Murray, I understand that. I do. I got no problem. The comparison to Michael Vick, I've got a problem. And I'm a Michael Vick fan, ladies and gentlemen, I am. But he isn't the passer that Kyler Murray is, and it seems ridiculous to compare Kyler Murray to Michael Vick when Michael Vick was never the passer that Kyler Murray is. So what are we doing? If you're talking about a running quarterback and comparing him to Michael Vick, that's fine. I got no problem with that. But if you're talking about the position of quarterback, generally speaking, I've got a big problem with that, because the number one attribute any quarterback ought to have is throwing the ball, and Kyler's a much better passer than Michael was.
You know, it's funny listening to people talk about Kyler versus Michael Michael Vick. There's one Michael. Michael Vick as a runner. It reminds me kind of funny, the argument that I wasn't alive for, but I've heard about it so much because I'm a baseball nut, is who is the greatest center fielder of all time. And I am totally on board with Willie Mays. And a lot of hardcore other football or baseball people would always say it's Joe DiMaggio. And the reason why they would say it is Joe DiMaggio could make every catch Willie Mays could make with his hat still on. And the point was that Willie was so athletic that you would see it just dripping off of him, while Joe was just so smooth. But nothing ever got by him. So because it was so effortless, people said it's not the same. Other people have to play harder, so they're better. I make that comparison because of Russell Wilson. I think it's too – somehow Russell Wilson makes running the football look more effortless. Like, when you're watching Kyler, you kind of feel like there's no way you can tackle that guy. When you watch Russell, how many times you go, hit him! Somebody take him down! And you, because he's so effortless at it, it looks like that it's easy for Russell Wilson, and therefore he doesn't get the same level of compliments.
Yeah.
But right now, Russell Wilson is the number one guy to me,
sure,
as quarterback in football because of everything, and I think he's the MVP of 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely, Douglas. No, I would agree with that comp right there. Russell Wilson coming out, we all know that was the comp for Kyler Murray. When he measured 5'10 and an eighth at the combine, it was ding.
Allegedly.
It changed everything, Douglas, because of Russell Wilson. That was the comp immediately. What's interesting about these two guys, you watch Russell run the ball. He's more of a straight line guy, ladies and gentlemen. Russell is more of a straight line guy. He's more of a slasher, that type of guy, get out of bounds. Kyler Murray, if you watch him, he's much quicker. He's much more elusive in terms of being one-on-one with the defender and making him miss. Where Russell uses a lot of straight line speed, you've got Kyler Murray, who's got better speed than Russell Wilson, who also has a little giddy up to him, a little hiccup to him. He's a guy that can do the move that he put on Landon Collins, even though it didn't count. The penalty annihilated his touchdown, but think about that move that he put on Landon Collins one-on-one in the end zone for a score. That was all Kyler Murray, and that's not Russell Wilson. You watch Russell Wilson, he doesn't run like that.
Now, Dan Orlovsky is a longtime backup quarterback in the NFL and actually spent most of his career, I believe, with Detroit as the Cardinals are getting ready to take on the Lions. Orlovsky was asked on ESPN's morning show, Get Up, how far do you have to go down your list of quarterbacks before you say Kyler Murray's name as a top quarterback?
Probably getting close to staying on one hand. I mean, as far as just such a difficult guy to play against. And here's the thing. He's the fastest player on the field more often than not.
Stop and think about that right there. It's the big difference between he and Russell Wilson, as far as I'm concerned. Russell's running a 4.5. You got Kyler running a 4.3. You got house it speed out of that quarterback. And that's what Michael Vick was so unbelievable. Michael Vick was 4.3 as well. Legit 4.3. And that just blew everybody's mind for the most part. But once again, the skill set of Kyler Murray, I'm trying to compare it. When you take that 4.3 speed into account, I'm trying to compare it to somebody else, and I can't find that guy. Russell Wilson is the closest guy from a skill set. I'm not talking about accomplishment. I'm not talking about playing the quarterback position. Russell Wilson still, to me, is the best quarterback in the game today. The best quarterback in the game today is Russell Wilson. So I'm not saying that Kyler Murray's better than Russell Wilson. What I am saying is Kyler Murray has a more unique skill set than even Russell Wilson.
It's really interesting when you hear, really think about what Dan Orlovsky said. It's getting close to time to being able to do it on one hand.
Yeah.
Where you would rank Kyler Murray. When I say Russell, Aaron Rodgers, and we now have, you know, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, and are you truly ready? If you've got one game to win in your life, are you truly ready to say you're not taking Brady? I'm ready to say I'm not taking Breeze.
Man.
I'm not ready to say I'm not taking Brady. When I give you those names, and really, and Matt Ryan's having a fantastic year, but his defense is atrocious. When I give you some of those names, are you ready to bump some of the names off that list and say Kyler's in the top five?
Yes.
Wow.
That's scary, isn't it? By the way, Dave Pasch, ladies and gentlemen, Il Bajado, actually texted right now. He wants in on this conversation.
Oh, yeah?
So we're going to do it at 9:30. Douglas.
Okay.
9:30, Dave Pasch.
I have the show sheet right here.
Bajado.
Dave Pasch. There you go. That's the first time we've had somebody, not the first time, but one of the rare times where you didn't send out a bat signal. They signaled us. They send out the wolf signal.
That's right. Well,
I'm coming on. Coming up next, what will Wolf watch? His eyes are going to be looking at Cardinals-Lions, but where's his focus? maybe you'll have the same focus after you hear the next beautiful part of the program on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Might want to listen to this, David.
I don't know why you potted that down. Feels pretty good this morning. Mike Hazen, Diamondbacks general manager, our exclusive conversation with him coming up in about 15 minutes. Wednesday, and everything's a little different in today's NFL in the coronavirus world, but Wednesday, the standard day of game plan day, Cardinals come into work, the players, and they figure out this is how we plan on beating Detroit. Well, what we've done over the years is Wednesdays, Wolf says, all right, Cardinals offense, I'm looking at you versus the opponent's defense. And on Thursdays, we do it a little different and take a look at what the Cardinals defense needs to do to contribute to a win. So in order for the Cardinals to get a victory, the one of the more important things that Wolf's going to be staring at is all a part of what will Wolf watch.
What will Wolf watch? The bludgeoning versus the Lions rush defense.
I love this stuff. The Cardinals are about to go caveman on Detroit, ladies and gentlemen. Neanderthals picked up a stick and either moved the earth with it or flattened another's face with it. Blunt force instruments have been around since the beginning, and I think the Cards might finally choose kickout blocks and metaphorical clubs to win a football game. Also called mass weapons, a bludgeoning weapon is a hitting thing, ladies and gentlemen, using a combination of mass and leverage to deliver blunt impact to a target. And although the Cardinals aren't known for their brutality, something tells me the Lions are about ready to be brutalized, at least on the stat sheet. The Arizona Cardinals are 2-0, but their offense is so different from the last half of 2019. DeAndre Hopkins has joined the band. Two tight ends have been replaced by three wide receivers in rundown situations for the most part. And Kyler Murray is running the ball like Lamar Jackson. The Godin Dag is a heavy two-handed club set with large metal spikes with an additional longer spike sticking up like it was on top of Cam Newton's head. Kenyon Drake looks nothing like Cam Newton, but the Cardinals need to get him going like they did in the second half of last season, and this is the game to do it. Matt Patricia's Lions are the worst rush defense in the National Football League. They play a hybrid 3-4 defense, but give up chunk runs like hyenas on a herd animal. The pride is anything but as teams run wild on Detroit. Through two games, Patricia's scheme is number 32 in rushing yards per game and number 32 in rushing yards per play allowed. They give up over 200 yards a game on the ground and over 6.4 yards per carry. Crushing. Speaking of, used against a living creature, blunt instruments crush flesh and shatter bones and don't need to penetrate armor to do it. And although the Cardinals won't run the ball in a destructive way, their deception will have the same effect by sucking the life out of the box. The only thing worse than getting run over for 200 yards in a game is getting run by for 200 yards a game. The Cardinals' last possession against Washington should be a precursor of clubbings to come. Kenyon Drake ran the ball five times for 37 yards, a veritable mace to Washington's hopes of another comeback. And this is what awaits the Cardinals' opponent on Sunday. Kenyon Drake and the inside zone. Kenyon Drake and the counter OF. Chase Edmonds and the zone read. Kyler Murray on a quarterback sweep. Or Kyler Murray on a quarterback draw. As stated, the Cardinals aren't a run-over team. The Cardinals are a run-by team. If they were a blunt instrument, they wouldn't be a mace or a maul. They wouldn't be a knuckle duster or a godin dag. They'd be a flail. They'd be a ball and chain with spikes emanating like a sunburst from that ball. They'd use tact timing, and centrifugal force the laws of nature to bludgeon their opponents into submission. Let's hope Patricia's front seven doesn't suddenly find a morning star on the ground and start swinging it. It's so odd to watch the Arizona Cardinals and the way they go about running the ball, ladies and gentlemen, because I do believe Sean Kugler has done a great job making that offensive line physical. He's got some dogs. He's got some real dogs on that offensive line, DJ Humphreys and J.R. Sweezy. Those guys come to mind immediately. And then he's got some cats, some technicians, like a Kelvin Beachum, Justin Pugh. These guys, to me, are more cat-like, and that's fine because you need dogs and cats to go out and actually play well on your offensive line. Guys that are more technician, guys that are more, I'm going to drive you into the ground. It's a great blend to have on the offensive line. But the Cardinals don't typically engage in the brutality of running the ball. There's a lot of deception, a lot more deception than destruction on the D-meter when you watch the Arizona Cardinals run the ball.
We played this for you earlier this morning if you've never heard it. But it's called Research and Doug. And in Research and Doug, we actually had something that's a little shocking for the national media.
In the 18 games of the Kingsbury era, the air raid averages 129 yards per game rushing.
They're still at 5 yards a carry.
I know. Listen, to me, if you want to count Kyler Murray when you snap it to him and then call a design play for him to run, that's part of it. There's no doubt about it. Yes.
Guys, this just came down from Adam Schefter on Twitter. The Chargers team doctor accidentally punctured quarterback Tyrod Taylor's lung just before kickoff while trying to administer a painkilling injection to the quarterback's cracked ribs.
You said the Cardinals. I'm going to say
the Chargers. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm like, whoa, what's he doing over there?
I said the Chargers. But
accidentally punctured his lung.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay. Complications?
Yeah.
Indeed.
No wonder you found out about it just right at the end. And nobody on the medical staff was going to say anything for a little bit. That's really, really rough. Coming up next, the 2020 season for the Arizona Diamondbacks has a day game today and a series coming up this weekend that's now a four-game series with a doubleheader on Friday, and that's it. Then the season's over. Mike Hazen, general manager of the Diamondbacks, will join us next and try to explain how we can make sure all of us that 2020 never happens again to the Diamondbacks. It's coming up next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf Mornings on the home of Arizona Diamondbacks Baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Diamondbacks front office focus.
Mike Hazen, nice enough to call into the Coulter Automotive Group sports line as we take a hard look at 2020 and try to take an excited look at 2021. Mike, good morning. How you doing this morning?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good, good. Mike, would you look at 2020, I'll just put it out there. What do you see?
I'd love to forget about it, but, you know, We don't have that. We don't get that option. We're going to have to take a hard look at it and try to figure out what happened. It's atypical, but the other 29 teams had to do the atypical too, and we ended up at the bottom. And you know, I just think that's not who we thought we were coming into the season. And you know, I think it's something that we're gonna have to take a look at going into the offseason. I still believe in this group of players. I do. I think it's a good group of baseball players. I think we have a lot of good components to this team, but for whatever reason, it didn't come together the way we had hoped. And that's on me with the guys that we have in the front office and the coaching staff to figure it out and fix it.
Mike, you know me, I'm a positive guy for the most part, right? But looking at this season right now, there has to be some type of trend that you're encouraged by, something that you're seeing right now. So let's start there. What are you encouraged by? Are there any trends that you're looking at and you're saying, man, that might be something in the future?
Yeah. Trends. I mean, look, we're sort of in the end of playing this out. There's not a lot of significance in terms of individual performance right now, but that would hold through for most September. So I'm not gonna go crazy in the other direction now, pointing at things that are sort of blinking lights for everybody. And I don't really ascribe to that. I think a couple things that I look at with this team, you know, that are positives in a lot of ways. I like the pitching staff that we have that's coming back next year. We're going to put the bullpen back together again. I know the loss of Archie Bradley is tough. I know from a leadership standpoint, I know what he meant to the back of our bullpen. We're going to figure out how to put that bullpen back together. And then from a lineup standpoint, outside of Cattell's injury, I think we were together for the most part of the season until we took Starling off the team. I think this group of position players is a good group of position players. I think they're a strong group of baseball players. I think offensively and defensively, we didn't necessarily perform to the way we wanted to perform this year as a group. And it really goes all the way down the line. There's no singling out in either direction. It's all of us. But I like that group, and we like that group. And I think there's a lot to really believe in going into next year. I know it's hard to look at this season and feel good about some of that stuff. It is the one aspect of the 60-game season that I feel like the individual performances, it's the one aspect of the 60-game season that I don't think we as evaluators, those of us that are in charge of putting the team together, can go too crazy on. It was a rough stretch for certain pieces of our season, not the entirety of it, but for certain pieces of our season that ended up sinking us. But there are some building blocks here that we're going to continue to build around. And that's what I'm hopeful of. We have work to do to sort of identify and fix why some of these things, especially some of the things that we've illuminated, the offensive approach, the inconsistencies at times of delivering offense when we aren't hitting the ball very well, those are pieces that we still need to try to rectify.
Mike Hazen, General Manager, Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Doug and Wolf. You have always been, with us, amazingly blunt. So I can't imagine what you're like in meeting rooms when you're actually looking at this and you can close the door and none of us know what your group is actually saying. But you're surprising me with a little more positivity. You've come on and talked to us about struggles offensively with runners in scoring position for a couple years now. What is it specifically that you're seeing that you feel like I don't need to make massive changes offensively? Why is it that you believe in a lot of these guys in 2021 when it wasn't just 2019, or excuse me, just 2020?
Yeah, I because I think there were a lot of really good things that happened in 2019 that we were looking to build upon, and those things didn't happen necessarily again in 2020 for everybody. And I think there are some ups and downs that go through from individual performances, and with a 60-game season, you're going to see, you know, bigger swings in those offensive performances. I feel like we have the talent to do the things that we want to accomplish. I don't think we've necessarily executed on them as consistently as we need to. Those are things that I believe are fixable from getting with the players and getting with the coaches and the front office and trying to figure out ways that we're going to improve those things. And there are subtle things. I won't get into the minutiae of it here, but there are things from a work standpoint, from a practice standpoint, from a consistency and approach mental standpoint that we need to lock down on a little bit more. And we're going to keep doing those things. And I think as you've seen some of the younger guys that have started to infuse onto the roster a little bit, the guys that are going to be playing roles for us in the future, these are some of the qualities that we're demanding that they bring to the table too. And I think with that maturation happening over time, we're going to see improvement there as well. And, you know, I feel like I'm fairly blunt and I try to be intellectually honest with how we're, you know, dissecting our team. And there's not a lot that I don't tell you guys that we don't have those same conversations internally. We're working towards fixing this. We understand that we have not performed to the level that we were expected to perform, that we collectively felt. I don't think anyone collectively felt going into this season that we weren't a good baseball team. We didn't do those things. We have to acknowledge that, address it, figure out why, and move on. But it doesn't take away from what I believe individually in the talent of these guys and what they'll be able to do collectively in the future.
Mike, when you consider the young guys and what you're seeing from the young guys right now, who comes to mind first? What's the player that comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a couple of good things that I think have sort of emerged for us. You know, I think Zach Gallen has taken a huge step forward. I think Christian Walker has taken a huge step forward again. Both of those guys started last year. They continue to do that this year. I think watching some of the young guys, the guys that we acquired in Van Meter, watching Pavin Smith and Dalton Varsho coming up from AA and jumping right into the big leagues. I think some of Josh Rojas, what he's done. I know the numbers in these from a batting to throw the batting averages out. I think some of the command of their at-bats, the command of the plate in their plate discipline and the approach that we're looking at in the consistency of those things for young players, that's going to improve. We're going to make sure that that continues to improve. Those are things that we really like to see. I think we've seen some guys in the bullpen, like Riley Smith you saw again last night. Mm-hmm. You've seen Crichton throwing in the closer role. I think you've seen Yoan Lopez, I think, steadily make good improvements over the course of the season. Those guys are all coming back. Those guys are all going to be with us. I think those are things that are going to complement the group of baseball players that are going to be taking the lion's share of the opportunity to win us ball games next year. I still believe that one of the things that we have not done a good enough job of in the front office is we have not given Torrey a roster that is as dynamic 1 through 28 this year, 30 this year, whatever, 26 in the future, that he needs to move in and out and be able to take advantage of matchups. We have talked a lot about that as a front office. We're going to continue to work on that going into the season. We're always going to be sort of stretched to take risks in that area. It's not an area that we can always invest a lot of capital in, but that's no excuse. We have to do a better job of it.
Mike, when I watch the NBA playoffs, I love Jeff Van Gundy and the things he says about the relationship with players and coaches. And one time in a radio interview, he said,
"I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm saying I'm blaming you."
And he said that's kind of the attitude sometimes of front office and coaches, that it's not your fault, but it's everybody's fault. But your message somehow isn't translating to this guy, and I can't fire a guy that's on a 4-year guaranteed contract, so I have to blame you. I'm not saying it's your fault, but I'm saying I'm blaming you. And we love that phrase, but I ask you, has there been a disconnect between your coaching staff, your pitching coach, your hitting coach, the defense isn't the same as we're accustomed to, whatever it is, and the player this year that should only be rectified by a change?
Look, it's a fair question. We're gonna look at everything that has gone into this season. I don't like to blame as a mechanism for underperformance. I watch and pay close attention to our work, our attention to detail, what we're trying to accomplish. I don't see those things. I don't see those things happening. I don't, even through a stretch where we lost 18 out of 20 games, which is mind-boggling, as we can all fit, you know, we can all sit here and think back to that. But losing 18 out of 20 games is mind-boggling in baseball. I never saw anything that would infringe upon why we shouldn't be better. I just think we didn't perform when it mattered. And you know, again, that starts with me. That starts with the roster that's put together, and I need to take a hard look at that. And we're going to have conversations in and around all those things with the coaching staff and where the messages aren't connecting or hitting. And, yes, there probably is a piece to that that is happening. I don't necessarily point to the coaches as the sole reason for why that message is either not being delivered or not being received. I shouldn't say not being delivered. I'm quite sure of what's being delivered. But it's on us as a front office and a coaching staff to understand why that message at times may not be being received. You know, we're sending the messages, and part of sending a good, strong message is that it actually gets received. We're going to dig into that.
Hey, Mike, just want to thank you for your time and your candor, as always. Really appreciate it, buddy. God bless you. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, guys. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mike. There's Mike Hazen, general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Your family owns and operates a dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. I admit, Wolf, you know, if it was any other situation, I would be so frustrated as a Diamondbacks fan hearing Mike Hazen be positive after a year like this.
Well,
but he's been so amazingly honest and brutally and just blunt about sure. negatives when this team's been good, you know, that I have so no. much trust in. I'm like, okay, I kind of disagree with you. I think that there's some serious questions about should this be blown up.
Sure.
But I trust him because he's done so many other very good things.
And with all fairness to Mike, I asked him. Okay, you know me. I'm a positive person. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and be positive about something that is happening now that you might be able to hang your hat on going into next year. I can tell you this. My big takeaway from talking to Mike Hazen is the fact he believes the talent is here.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me he's bringing back a lot of these guys.
Yeah. I believe they do have talented players. What I don't believe in is their ability to handle pressure situations very well. And therefore, their talent then doesn't show because of pressure. So it doesn't matter that you have talent.
I think
players.
They're largely going to get a do-over.
Coming up next, DeAndre Hopkins getting a do-over with a new team and setting records while doing it, yet still holding himself accountable. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You've been listening to D-backs Front Office Focus.